to the Power Hour on Verb Moto.
Welcome to another episode of the Power Hour here on the Verb Pod Network. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, my co-host, guy I go back and forth with on a weekly basis about all things motocross, supercross, and everything else in between, Zach Heron. He's not quite at the ranch right now, but he's counting down the days. Zach, how's it going?
It's good, man. The road to Loretta's is officially underway. Just about time to start kicking off regionals as well. So that's probably the most pressure-filled situation, I think, on the entire trip to Loretta. So I'm excited for that, man. Still shaking off all the cobwebs from World of Mini. I had a blast. Already looking forward. Finally got the confirmation that I will be out at Verbadilla for the J-Day event. A little bit of moto, a little bit of off-road, and a whole lot of good time. So that's May 18th and 19th, the Verb Shred Tour heads up to Unadilla, New Berlin, New York. I was going to say RIP to JJ. He didn't die. He just retired. He's doing much better, actually, than last year. Doesn't have to worry about anybody crossing the track. Yeah, he's doing great. But no, man, it's going to be an awesome time. You guys got to check that out. It was so much fun last year. Just, first of all, one of the only opportunities that you have to ride the Unadilla, like not you two, the Unadilla track. Still grassed over like back in the day, man. It was absolutely badass to ride. And then just a great racing series as well. Ethan and everybody over at J-Day do a great job. And so it's going to be a good time. We're going to be slinging some merch, going to be doing all things that come along with Shred Tours. I'm sure there's going to be some raffles, some giveaways, and plenty of Stasic and pit bike racing to go along with it too. So it's going to be a good time, man. Once again, May 18th and 19th. So it's coming up quick.
Yeah, no, it'll be here before you know it. You got your confirmation. I did not. So it does not sound like we're going to be able to, bring that back together, as far as the bromance and creating content together. I wish that was the case, but I will be at Loretta's. So, counting down the days to that. That's, about 3 months out from there. And yeah, like the regionals are about to get going. That's when the real pressure starts. Like you said, heading to the ranch. It's one thing to go to an area. A lot of those races are just sort of part of a separate series. Kids show up. If you do well, maybe you have an opportunity to go to a regional. But yeah, at those regionals, they are all business. Everyone's there to do well. And I like to actually kind of go through some of the results and see how many kids sort of like kind of come up just short as far as like they needed. Is it sixth? They take top six from regionals?
So it's different from every region. I believe the Southeast region where I'm at is the top seven. I know some, I believe, go up as high as eight. Some are like four. Like some, it's like you got to finish like almost on the podium to qualify. And so, yeah, it's no joke. It's three moto format. So you've got to go and you've got to perform. They split it between the youth and amateurs. And so, I'll be doing the amateur regional out at Matt Walker's place at Itchikani here in a couple of weeks. From what I know, man, I haven't ever been out there before. You're supposed to be the best of the best, the greatest in the world. So, I can't wait to see it, man. Like I said, I've never been out there. I know better than to ask if I can ride practice. I got no business being out there because, like you said, it is all business. There's no smiles. There's no friends being made. You know, you're walking up with birds flying. And so it's going to be fun, man. I like it. You know, the Loretta's, obviously it's got pressure in its own right, but you got to make it, right? You got to make it to Loretta's. And so even those kids that are just stoked to get 42nd gate pick at Loretta's, this is when, you know, somebody like myself, I was a C-class hero, man. I'll never forget. Unadilla actually was where my regional was.
Yeah. Tell me about your regional. I want to know about this.
Dude. Okay. So 2015, first of all, that was coming off of a year of trying to qualify. I destroyed my knee in 2014 at the area qualifier, was done, had to have knee surgery, yada, yada, yada. I get back on the bike in December, qualify out of my areas in North and Southeast. We go to Gatorback, was my Southeast regional. That was my first regional. We get the bright idea to drop two teeth on the rear sprocket. Don't test with it at all. And dude, I was 43rd out of a 42 rider gate drop, man. It was absolutely terrible, but I pulled a sneaky Kyle Peters move, man. I hugged the inside in the first turn and actually popped out about mid pack just in time to go ejecto cito, all the way down to the bottom of the gator pit where I proceeded to just fucking get run over and everything else. So, first moto was not good. I put it like this, 12:20 DNS, the only race I've never like finished. I didn't even line up for the third moto. It wasn't going to happen. Wasn't having a good time, was hurting pretty bad. And so I'll never forget the Northeast and Southeast regionals were 1 week apart. Okay. And we live in North Carolina, Central North Carolina. So we drove 9 hours south down to Gatorback, got my ass royally handed
to me.
You need
to go suck it up.
And then on the way back, all we had to think about was whether or not we wanted to do the 12-hour drive north in 2 days. Cause I mean, if you're going to the regional, you've got to leave essentially Thursday to be able to be ready for the whole weekend. And so, you know, I always got to give props to my parents, man. I mean, first of all, 450 C class, folks. All right. It ain't Jeremy McGrath day. All right. Mitch Payton ain't going to be waiting, even if I go 1-1-1. But it's the pinnacle of my racing career, man. I worked hard to be able to get to that level. And anybody that knows the national level C class, that you're running B class speeds and stuff. So it was some legit racing. And, you know, Dad, he sucked it up and he said, you know what? We didn't go to that Northeast area to not go to the regional if we had to. And so, We go from 90 degrees in Gatorback up to about a brisk 60 degrees in New Berlin, New York. I'm wearing a hoodie in practice. And U2, which is the amateur track at Unadilla, is still probably one of my favorite tracks, man. Loved it. Yeah. A lot of rocks, but just a real natural, flowy kind of track. And, man, it was – you want to talk about pressure, dude. It was all or nothing. I mean, I got third in my first two motos. So I went 3-3 and I'll never forget. I'm sitting on the line for the third moto and I get just completely pinched off headed in the first turn. And I come to a complete stop in the first turn. I am like 37th, dude. I am done. Like it is not happening. And dude, that's probably the fastest I've ever ridden, man. I think I did nothing but outsides and I don't think the throttle ever cracked and was able to come back to seventh. So we went 3-3-7 for third overall, got the ticket, headed to the ranch.
Did you post
man.
The picture with the ticket?
Hell yeah. Me and the old man. It's funny. Dad's so bad at technology. He had moved it to where like his camera naturally put like this blue filter over all of his photos. So all of the photos from Unadilla that weekend had this like blue tint to it. Oh, but no, it's funny. That's actually the only time Verb Moto has taken a picture of me on a motorcycle was they were there taking pictures at the regional and I'm sitting there all mean mugging on the starting line. Dad's behind me. Dad is very, very intense. He is no Gary Bruff. Let me put it like that. He is breaking pit boards. He is screaming. Veins are popping. But it was fun, man. Those weekends are pretty badass. I mean, it's been years since then. And I mean, the road to Loretta's is pretty cool. I mean, it gets a bad name and a bad rep. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I do think could be improved about it, but the overall principle of chasing the dream and chasing just being able to get to that race. Like I said, I knew I wasn't going to be a pro rider, but to be able to say that I earned the spot to line up out there. And then to go out and put it under the impound tent, all three motos and get a top 10 finish. That was cool for me, man. I'm scared to ever try to line up again. Plus 30 BC class. I'm thinking about, we got a couple years to start training, but it's like one of those deals where I don't know. I had a good run. I maybe don't want to risk it. I've officially made it on a Loretta Lynn's podium. Sure. I was interviewing a racer, but nonetheless, I made it on one. So I don't know, man, that might be the tip of the cap, but man, it's cool. The regionals are a fun experience. It's fun being a racer that's done it, getting to see, you know, these kids that are usually all wild and crazy and they're sitting on the line and they're real quiet and they're real nervous and you're like, yeah, you're feeling the intensity, you're feeling the weight of the situation. So it's cool though, man. I enjoy it. I love it. I think it's all about trying to have a good time and just get the most out of yourself. And so it's going to be fun to watch like you do, man. I do a lot of scrolling through the results, and it's funny. Usually that kid that got about eighth or ninth didn't quite make it, let's say, last year. Be on the lookout for him at the podium this year because usually that's where the fire really starts.
Back with some vengeance.
It's that first year that you don't qualify that really fuels the intensity that leads you to success out there. So it'll be fun to watch, man. But till then, we're going to be hanging out up at Unadilla. I'll be reminiscing. I will send you pictures from where I crossed the finish line when I qualified for the 450 C class.
There you go. Yeah, no, we saw that track when we were putting out banners and when we were at Unadilla. Checking some things out and doing that whole deal. The track, both U2 and Unadilla. They're just absolute cathedrals of motocross. The fact that you get to hit the sky shot, screw, actually, I don't think you get to do screw you, as part of the J Day. Although,
yeah, I was about to say, I don't think they
it
do
wasn't that. Part of that, but they could, they obviously could open it up. It's literally just a down the hill and back.
And it was cool. You got to do both Unadilla and U2 for J Day. They'd take the pits down and you jumped across into, over. And then you would enter the woods on the far side of U2 and then pop back out. Like I said, it is really cool the way they put these tracks and these trails together. I know, their opening round was out at Southwick. Same thing. They kind of a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And so,
I was gonna say, how do they do it for Southwick? Cause like, isn't Southwick in a town?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy. I don't know. Call Johnny Girard. That's where he's from.
Fair enough. I probably call Gavin Guegua. He was probably He's probably putting down some lap times. But they also have Verbapalooza. That's at Washougal. They're gonna bring back Straight Rhythm because we're not very imaginative as far as track layout is concerned. We just drew a straight line on a page and then we built jumps around that, which it's gonna be amazing. It's pit bikes. If it's Washougal and Carson Brown isn't there, and if he's not running some of the most badass BBR mini bikes in the entire world, like I don't think anyone else is showing up to win that race unless he has Red Bull has him going somewhere else that weekend.
Yeah, there's a good chance that he's going to kick everyone's ass on a Yamaha Zuma. Like, let's just say it. Like, yeah, he can show up on a moped that he rode to the track and will still probably outrun 90% of us. So, yeah, that'll be fun. That's June 15th and 16th. I don't know if you're going. I don't know if I'm going. That's a bit of a flight for me, so we'll see how that one goes. But
start hitchhiking now.
Yeah, I might start now. But the Shred Tour is badass, man. It's a good time, and it's just good atmosphere to go along with it. So exciting stuff coming up with that. But man, what a race! We got to get reunited, man. We're gonna have to do our own Shred Tour if we have to.
Yeah.
But what a race, man! All kidding aside, little music. Little moto, but Nashville, dude, it's got bad mojo. Like, don't know what
we're gonna
it
get
is,
to that. That is part of
killer,
the,
man.
That is part of the race tech suspension and engines block pass. But before that, we have to get to the Moto Coatings Company quick banter. One of the scariest crashes of 2024. Kenny's shock explodes after what can only be considered one of the most gnarly triples. Like, that's not a built triple. That's just guys jumping to it. That's actually one of my favorite things, is when guys just jump to something that technically shouldn't or wasn't designed to be put that way. They're jumping towards basically that first whoop, and it all went up in smoke.
And from what I understand, sounds like there wasn't a lot of time on the shock. Like, they genuinely are investigating as to what happened, because it wasn't something that seems to be very easy to explain. That's honestly, I didn't realize just how gnarly the crash was until I saw the camera view from down on the floor. Like I say it all the time, like it, whether it's outdoors or supercross, like the cameras tone down the intensity of the tracks so much, but that on the floor camera, dude, you can just see he's hauling ass. And man, when it bucks him up off the back and his toes tickle his shin bone, I'm like, dude. I signed up for a yoga class as soon as I saw that, because I'm like, if the back of his leg didn't just completely come undone, that's insane. So
his the toes of his motocross boots are like against his shin, like and then he's like he springs up. And he's the craziest thing is how long he held on to the bars.
Yes.
That was super scary. And then, his feet hit the ground. The way his feet hit the ground, I wouldn't be surprised if he has, he's going to lose some toenails, because that's just such a slam. And you get that, you know, when you, like, you sometimes you crash and you just get,
slam
like,
your toes bang into your boot. Yeah.
Yeah, you get, like from a skiing, like growing up skiing, we called that toe bang. You basically just, like, your big toe slams off the front of your boot, and like, yeah, the nail turns black and you lose.
Yeah,
it
nail
later.
Turns black. I've seen, I saw his picture of his knees, and his left knee is probably about twice as big as his right. Like it
yeah,
is.
So that MRI is probably going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, it's, I mean, fingers crossed, man. I just hate it. Like, it's like, I wanted him healthy. I wanted him with some fire, you know, towards the end of the season. But yeah. All in all, like, the fact that he's okay, because that could have gone much, much worse. And so, but yeah, nonetheless, it just goes to show how quickly things can come undone. I mean, you know, we talk about how hard these guys are pushing the motorcycles and stuff like that. And I mean, yes, I know it was a Suzuki, but like, it's a damn good bike.
Yeah.
And it's like, at the end of the day, like, that could have happened on any manufacturer, but it just shows, like, dude, these guys are running these bikes to the limits, man. Like you said, I mean, it's like track owner or track designers probably sitting there going, well, I didn't quite see them jumping that, but all right, fair enough. And it's like, that all leads to stuff where it's like, you know, the transitions aren't as smooth as they could be. It puts more pressure on the wheels, on the suspension, on the riders themselves. And so, yeah, it's that was a gnarly one. And like we said, as far as honestly handling a situation like that, pretty graceful. I mean, like, to be able to get off, literally still landed on his feet and kind of rolled out of it, like, it's pretty
worse.
Impressive. Yeah, it could have been really, really bad. So, yeah, that was not a fun one to watch, for sure. Going up in smoke on 420.
No doubt. Yeah, on 420. Yeah, there's more than a few guys who feel like they were probably got smoked after this last weekend. Like, Nashville seems to be the place where seasons come to die. And this is where we go to the race tech suspension and engines block pass. First of all, you're going to do gold valves this year with your suspension, correct?
Dude, I'm about it. Let's get it done. Anything that can make me feel better on a motorcycle,
increased plushness,
I need
and
it.
Bottoming resistance. And you're like a tall drink of water, so I assume bottoming is a problem for you sometimes.
Yeah, call me Stone Temple Pilots because I like it plush.
I like it. But yeah, Nashville, I don't know what it is about it. Like you got 2 years in a row. Aaron Plessinger can't even race it because he's hurt at the time. Guys are getting injured left, right, and center last year. That was the end of Cooper Webb's season last year. This year you had Kenny, who is like the back of his motorcycle literally explodes. A rock hits the throttle assembly on Chase Sexton's bike, forcing him to whiskey throttle. Like, that was a Brad Gebhardt kind of crash of the getting whiskey on a face and then coming up, but still somehow coming up super short and then endoing into the like, like I connected with that.
About to say,
you know what I mean? Like that was a, like
speaking
like
to your
Sexton,
average rider there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like throw a 95 on that. And then, you know, exactly what it would look like. It was an onboard camera for me. He seemed upset. I saw someone comment. He's like, "Oh, he just walks away from his bike." I'm like, "These are professionals. They don't go like they." I'm sure they're told not to go pick up your bike. It's someone else's job to go get that thing.
Well, and he's hurt, he slammed into.
And you're
the
not getting back in the race, so
yeah, like.
Like he said something to Brandon Zimmerman, his mechanic. I'd imagine that Brandon's probably, if Chase is in fact racing this weekend coming up, he's flying out Wednesday to put that bike together. If he's not doing a build day yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
I mean,
he would have had
definitely
to frame
damage.
That thing.
Yeah. I was about to say all the way down.
Yeah. So brand new bike for Sexton rolling into the next round, but like he doesn't finish. That's huge hit to the championship points. I think that makes him officially out of the
running for it. Yep.
Like we're getting three rounds down now. It would take a catastrophe from both Cooper and Jet for that to sort of be brought up again. Obviously another great ride from Eli, but he doesn't beat the one guy that he needs to beat in order to sort of like climb his way back into the conversation talk. And I think for the most part, anyone who really has a grip on things knows that he's probably like, I wouldn't say eliminated, but it's about as far a stretch as it was for Chase. Although last year it did happen that he was able to get that, but it literally required an absolute an injury that we've never seen to a championship contender before in order for that championship to become Chase Sexton. So but this is wild. Like we saw a lot of big crashes, not even to mention the 250 class, where if you're Mitch Payton, your hair is just like pushed all the way up after the second corner because you got two red plates on the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. I've said it before. He must have done some back alley voodoo deal back in the day. And they were like, look, we're going to give you 20 years. You're going to kick ass. And then after that, you will never have success again. And it's like, I mean, I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, you know, they seem so graceful and so perfect, whatever rider he's got in X year. And then it's just like, and they took each other out. Like, and again, yeah, it wasn't anybody's fault, but it's just like, it's this like poetic injustice in a way where it's like, oh, like it just, yeah, it sucks, man. I mean, Cam McAdoo's deal in practice when he came together with that rider, that was a hard hit. That was ugly. Yeah. And I mean, I will, opinions on McAdoo, on Kitchen, whatever, dude, you got to say these guys are tough, man. Oh, I mean, it's like,
his nails.
That is some badassness. And I mean, McAdoo has shown his determination multiple times through injuries. And then, I mean, as somebody that's had broken ribs before, for Kitchen to be able to do anything, let alone still ride and make passes, if he's got broken ribs, is pretty damn incredible.
That's all adrenaline right there, right?
Oh, that's what I mean, dude. I bet after the race, he felt like Mike Tyson just curb stomped.
That's why he had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, it's
how do you finish a main event and then go to the hospital?
Ugh. Yeah, and that's I hate it for Mitch, don't get me wrong, and I hate it for everybody there at PC and everything like that, but it's like for the riders in particular, like I'm just like, damn, dude, like it's just a bummer. You know, now this is not one of our Verb Thoughtline questions, but a question that I've had. We know that moto guys get a little superstitious, right? The red gloves, you got to put this boot on first, this, that, and the other thing. Do you think that with all of this talk and all of the rumors going on for years now about the PC curse, do you think that slides into any of these amateurs' heads where they're like let's say they have, you know, a star and a PC ride right there, you know, or a KTM and a PC ride or something like that, where it's like, hey, you know, the money makes sense for both of these, blah, 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 blah. But, like, do you think it ever even creeps into their head where it's like, I don't know, man, fucking Pro Circuit just, they just got bad mojo. I don't know. Like I could just see some of these riders being such head cases where it's like, you know, like I've seen a lot of people that say like Austin Faulkner would not crash if he wasn't on a PC bike. Like, it is the PC curse that has put Faulkner on the ground. No, I'm not saying I agree with that, but yeah. I'm just saying it's like those kind of theories and speculations are out there. How long until they start to seep into the heads of the highly susceptible youth that is coming up through the, I mean, you know, how long till OnTrack Schools is talking, you know, all right, now, you know, Pro Circuit, they got a little bit of a reputation here, but I don't know. I can't help but wonder because it's so weird, the bad luck. Like, you almost can't help but feel like there is a greater power. It's like striking down green bikes.
Well, to be completely honest, like, rolling into this season, maybe you could make an argument that Kitchen is like the, I guess, your second to the flagship rider on that team to Austin Faulkner. They're basically like 1A, 1B on that team. But also, I'd throw Seth Hammaker in the mix as like your leaders of the team as far as like speed and expectations to win. And those two aren't even the guys who are leading the championship because they're hurt. Like,
well, many people forget that like Voland was kicking ass. Like, yeah. Voland was a brand new rider and then he got hurt. Like, that's what I mean. It's not the bike's not good. It's not the team's not good. There is a demon.
Something going on with it.
Yeah,
something going on with the green bikes. I don't know. I just from experience of a lot of these guys coming out of amateurs, like, to be honest, there's not really a lot of opportunities that are really all that tantalizing as far as like whether you're going to turn pro with like most of the kids that go to whether it's the Pro Circuit or Star, like, unfortunately, they don't have a lot of options.
Well, and I was going to say, like, very rarely have we seen, that I can think of, an amateur here recently that hasn't been pre-Kawasaki. Like, Like Drew Adams, obviously, is probably the next in line to go up to PC, but it's like they're already in the green pipeline, if that makes sense. Whereas like Star is like, yeah, we don't care what bike you're on, you'll be on blue next year. Like, and so
I'm trying to think of somebody like that went straight to pro circuit, because like McAdoo had like a weird sort of path that he was like good, and then MCR for a while, and then he went to Geico, and then he got canned from that gig. So then he filled in at TLD, and then he was so good outdoors, he actually parlayed that into a pro circuit ride.
That's what I mean. Like, I can't think of anybody that's been just off of, especially off of a different brand.
Yeah.
That has just jumped up to PC. Like, it's like, I mean, like, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Cause Tickle and them were already pro. Dino was on a Kawasaki.
Yeah.
Beforehand. He was riding for
He was like bred.
Yeah.
Like,
and so,
actually, I've probably seen more guys on Cowie's who went somewhere else and then had to come back to Cowie, a la Blake Baggett. Yep. And then, I guess it's funny, like, Justin Hill didn't win until his second time coming back to pro circuit. Like, people forget that he did the pro circuit thing, sucked it up outdoors. He was like number 346 or something like that. He had like a weird number. Mm-hmm. And then he went, like, he like didn't train. Mitch was out at odds with him. He went to factory KTM, which was wild for 1 year. Yep. That was horrible. Then he went to TLD KTM, which didn't really do any better, although he had some better results. I think he might have won a race or two. And then he went back to Pro Circuit, won the championship, took the number one plate to TDR.
Yeah.
And then the rest of that. Yeah, that was kind of wild. But yeah, you're right. Like the pathway to Mitch's team is either you're a veteran or you've been on Cowie since the ill-fated Kawasaki 65 that has not changed since 2001.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I love that they don't even have new plastics for that piece of shit. Like,
fuck it.
The KLX 110 looks more modern than the 65.
It's probably, they're probably selling more of them. I mean, like, I hate to say it, but
Like, there was one kid at Loretta's last year on a KX 65. I think he was number 22, and he's like mid back. Like, the days of like half of the 65 class at Loretta's being green is like, like, now that like the Cobras are sick, and all of the Austrians.
Yeah, at least we're getting back to seeing a lot more yellow fenders. They're Cobras, but
yeah, the Cobras.
Like, I remember back in the day when like Treadle and Tomac.
Even Tomac, he rode a yellow Kawasaki for 1 year.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I bought my 65 from Gavin Treadle, and it was a Suzuki when we bought it, and then put neon green plastic on it.
It clearly
says Kawasaki on it, but yeah, it's funny how all that has worked and not changed. But it's definitely interesting as far as the pipeline for PC goes. But I mean, nonetheless, you can't help but feel bad. I mean, you know, Mitch didn't know me from anybody else, but it's like, you hate to see it. You hate to see it for the team. You know they're putting effort and money into it. And, I mean, realistically, a team like that, like Pro Circuit, was the Star before Star. You know what I mean? Right. Like, they have been the 250 team forever. And so, yeah, we'll see, man. I mean, like, maybe you just need that one to break the curse, and then they get it, and then they go back on a roll. I don't know how it works.
I haven't won,
man,
a title since 2019 outdoors with AC, and like,
it's... Yeah, and Justin Hill, I think, was their last Supercross title, right?
Right. That would have been 2017,
I think.
17 West Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
And so,
it was.
Yeah, who knows how it all shapes out. But, I don't know, man. It's just, it's a bummer. It was a hell of a night. And it's one thing for it to go bad, but, like, both your riders within half a second of each other. Like,
on the ground, and not just like fall over and like, oh, they're gonna get 10th now. Like, no, both down and hurt.
Eight shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Like, and of course now with the 22 point, like the 22 riders, 22nd doesn't get any points. Mm-hmm. Like McAdoo, he ended up pulling out of that race. Obviously he gets 0 points on the weekend. His championships hopes are done. And essentially we're going to get to this in a little while. Although I didn't even write it down as a note because it's just so like, storyline that gets lost in all this is that VL is now your unless something wild happens, he's got a good amount of points on Deegan now. Like this is a significant point swing. Like I think Deegan obviously, like he's sort of like, I think they were kind of counting some chickens before they hatched. So, like if I win the shootout, and then hopefully there's some West guys between me and the rest of them. Like he actually ended up losing points on this weekend with some West guys between him and Vial. That's a huge swing in the points. And yeah, like that's just making Tom Vial even more Marvin Musquin than he's ever been.
I was just about to say that. Yeah,
it's East Coast. It's like if he throws a fucking heel clicker, I'll just lose my mind.
Dude,
like, does he come out with number 25 and just do heel
clickers? I was about to say, when does 25 become available? Because it's like, that's his freaking number.
Who's running 25
like,
right now?
Is it still Marv? Does he still have the number?
Yeah, he technically would. Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I don't know, man. But yeah, I better get one of his jerseys quick because it's either going to have a 25 or he's going to shave a 6 off of it because he's looking good right now.
Yeah, he's going to shave. He's going to be returning next year to the East Coast with a big old number 1 on his bike. And if you win a Supercross championship, you get to pick a permanent number, which I think a 16 is the permanent number he chose.
I think that was what he chose, yeah.
But if he's, if he wins an outdoor title or if he's top 10 in points, he has the opportunity to pick a single digit.
Single digit, yeah. I was about to say.
I'd like someone to finally wear 8. Someone's got to wear 8.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why someone hasn't taken 8 yet. But I digress. It is time for the thought line. Let's move straight to the thought line. You can submit your questions. You can just tweet at me at BigMX Radio, or you can just send me an email at brad@verbmoto.com. Starting things off right out of Georgia. That's not how they talk. Jacob Vandervelt. This was a long one. This is, I read this. I thought it was kind of neat. You know, this is sort of posing a question to some like learned moto individuals, of which we are not. Said there is a guy in our riding group that has been bringing his new girlfriend to the track. We've ridden with him for over 15 years and he usually brings the beer. Unfortunately for us, the girlfriend has the personality of a wet mop and usually just sulks in the truck. Do we tell him that she is a downer or leave it be?
Well, first of all, is he still bringing beer? Because that was put in there as though it stopped. And that
He is continuing to bring the beer.
Okay.
And I think
as,
that
the beer is
they're thinking that
so,
if they
so okay, and that's
themselves
an important
from him,
that's an important distinction right there because you got a risk versus reward here. Do I tell him his girlfriend's a bitch? Do I possibly lose my beer plug?
I think that's essentially what he's suggesting, as well as a dear friend as well, perhaps.
Well, yeah, but like beer, you know what I'm saying? And so.
Maybe
I don't know. I mean, like Jacob, I don't know what your buddy's like. You know, I don't know how cool you guys are with having conversations like that. Cause talking about, you know, somebody's woman is, you know, in the wrong way can be taken the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's like I would like to know, I think you gotta start by asking some more, information gathering questions here. Who's asking to come to the track? Is she saying, hey, I want to come to the track? Or is he telling her, hey, you're coming to the track with me, whether you want to or not? Because it's like, you know, if she doesn't want to be there and she's getting essentially forced to be there, then yeah, you need to say something to your dude. Like, first of all, why are you forcing your chick to be here?
Yeah,
because it's
she
like,
ain't having fun,
like,
why you bring her, man?
And that's what, and you know, to me, it's like, my chick isn't going to be able to sit in the truck because if you're with me, I'm dragging your ass out and you're either having conversations with me and my buddies and hanging out with me. We're watching the race or whatever. So in a way, it's on his buddy too. It's like, you know, she's only sitting in the truck and sulking because you're letting her. But at the same time, you know, like if she's just hating it and like she doesn't want to be there, then who's benefiting on this? Like you can't tell me he's getting laid after that because it's like, oh, thanks for letting me sit in the hot truck all day. I had so much fun. Like,
yeah.
So here's, you know, maybe we cut our beer consumption down. Maybe we double stack them. Maybe we add a little White Claw to the other side. All right. You know, I remember taking my lady to the track for the first time. And
are you suggesting a peace offering of sorts?
Well, and this is what I'm saying. You gotta make some accommodations because we love the dirtiness of it, right? I like sitting there with my shirt off and sand in my fucking belly button, and you know, I smell like shit, and you know, this, that, you know, it's like, it's part of it, right? It's part of the atmosphere that is it. It's not all ladies are like that though. And so, you know, I remember pulled up next to a nice tree, set an Eno up, you know, connected it to my truck and to the tree, let her get sprawled out, brought her some snacks, couple of drinks. Next thing you know, like I'm enjoying my ride home, if you know what I'm saying. Like, it's like, you know, maybe a little, rather than tell your dude, like, she's the problem, maybe ask your dude whether or not he's the problem. Because it's like, could you be doing,
is he not putting enough effort to make it fun for her?
Let me ask you, okay, if your girlfriend told you, let's say this guy rides, sounds like pretty regular, okay, maybe weekend, bi-weekly, if you will. If your girlfriend told you, hey, we're going to go to a dance competition or a cheerleading competition every other weekend, and you have to come with me. I'm sitting in the truck. I'm not going out there. But if she's like, and I'm going to bring you a case of beer, all right, we're going to get you set up. We're going to have, you know, I'll put you on the iPad or whatever it is. I sound like a toddler now, but nonetheless, you know, if maybe some accommodations to help me adjust to this new atmosphere that I'm not comfortable in. You know, I mean, I don't know if maybe something as simple as buying her a nice helmet. One of you guys have got to have a pit bike, right? Maybe give her the opportunity to maybe learn to ride, fall in love with this sport that you all share. Yeah. And who knows? She could be bringing chicks for Jacob by the next race. You never know, man. You got to look at this as an opportunity. And so, I don't know, man. I mean, it's from what I'm understanding, she sounds quiet, reserved, away from the action. If she was just loudmouthed and, oh my God, I hate this, I don't want to be here, she's bitching to the whole group. Yeah, no, sorry, dude. You gotta get her the hell out of here. But if she's just quiet and reserved, she might be scared, man. It's a scary new world of dangerous machinery.
Yeah. Perhaps she's intimidated. Like if those guys, if she's standoffish and like she's getting that same energy back, like that's,
right. Yeah. Right. I mean, we all know Moto can have a cold shoulder, you know, you know, we're not all Chris Kiefer, you know, helping put up canopies and shit like that. So maybe she just needs to, and not to mention like the female side of the Moto world, especially not those that don't ride. Like if you're just a guy's chick and you're there with everybody else's shit, you know, like it's like, she's not prepared for the, is my guy faster than her guy? You know, I mean, it's like, there's hierarchy to this shit. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, Jacob.
Don't know if Jacob's buddy is like the most remedial and slowest of the group. Like maybe she's just out of straight, just embarrassment not coming out.
Well, and that's, I mean, you know, I don't want to get into how the girl looks, but there's a lot of factors that could all affect comfort and desire to be out there.
There's layers to this.
I mean, you know, John Cena says she ain't lady if she ain't 280, but I can't see 280 plus enjoying a day at, you know, at Southwick. You know, there's a lot of folds to get stuck in. And so, you know, there's a lot more context. Jacob, maybe some photos, maybe a group of you with the boys.
Help us out, Jake.
And then like crop her off to the side so we are very clearly able to understand who's who. And we'll continue to help this, man. You know, we're all about love here on the Power Hour.
For sure. Here. Absolutely. And, by all means, like sometimes you don't have to say all things that come into your head. Maybe you just leave it be. And these two end up getting in a fight about something completely separate. And he ends up coming to the track next weekend. She's no longer in the picture. The conversation never had to be had. Let's go to David Thompson out of Iowa. Who of young pros could benefit the most from going and getting a job in construction to give them a little bit of perspective about how to appreciate their current spot? Well, that's blunt.
Yeah, I mean,
I think David's got like kind of maybe had like a little. He's huffing and puffing about some of these. I feel like David might yell at some clouds every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because we hear, and I hear rumors, right? Like very rarely do I get something where it's like from somebody where I'm like, oh, that's 100% true.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I had, I mean, I'm trying, You know, like I know there's been a lot of talk about Romano after the Linville, which shout out to Gage Linville. He was rolling this past weekend. But kind of one of those deals where it's like, you know, again, not saying that Romano doesn't take it, you know, or takes it for granted or anything like that, but it's like, yeah, it's almost like these guys, especially these kids that have been on the grind their whole life, they get so caught up in this bubble of motocross and, you know, being, cause I mean, I hate to say it, but like, you know, Drew Adams, he's 15 years old, but like he shows up to a track and he's a rock star. Like everybody's looking at him. Everybody knows who he is, you know? And so that ego and just kind of becoming accustomed to that, it naturally happens because, you know, Adam Cincerello was 12 and he was the fastest mofo on the property 9 times out of 10. And it's like, you can't help but kind of start to become accustomed to that. And so, yeah, man, some of them need to just go work with a guy named Daryl that doesn't give a shit who you are and his hands as big as your head. And he could easily probably squeeze your head and pop it with those hands because it's just like, yeah, I think, I mean, you've obviously got plenty of experience in the blue collar work field. I've done plenty of different jobs doing this and that. And I can say with the utmost confidence that, you know, both doing what we do and doing what professional racers do is a blessing compared to what others have to do. I mean,
for sure.
I think that's why it's pretty cool. Like there's a couple of people that ride the Warrior class in my local series that, you know, they've been deployed. They've literally seen their buddies die. And it's like, even when they have a bad moto, it's pretty cool to watch the calmness and the emotions get reeled back in because of the perspective that they have, the right. real world perspective. And so, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say, I'll say Romano, Ferry. I've heard, you know, Ferry maybe not quite putting in the time. I think that's actually our next question. Yeah. So we'll funnel that right in. So Tevin Louderson coming out of Florida, said WTF, what happened with Ferry mid-season split seems weird. And I agree. It seems like
you don't see it very often, no.
Yeah, something. And it was
parties
abrupt,
are just sour like, until the end of the year, right?
Yeah, I was, I couldn't help but notice. I didn't get to watch the race until yesterday, but I noticed that like a Triumph feature was done and there was no mention of, it's funny because you can tell the interview with the team manager, he's speaking in plurals. Our riders are capable of this. We have the right riders.
Yeah.
To be
that able, must have been edited like
yes,
recently.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember when the announcement came out this past week, but it wasn't Monday. I mean, and so, yeah, that had to have been put together like last second. But, yeah, I mean, I've heard some speculation about Little Red Dog and, you know, the work. And it's funny because it's, so many people talk about Danger Boy, but I have never heard from anybody that Danger Boy doesn't do the work. Like anybody that's been around him.
He cannot do the work. He's,
he's under too much of a microscope. Like it's,
yeah,
he's got to perform. And so I'm going to say my guys are going to be either Romano or Ferry. Who you got?
The list is probably the exact same. Those two guys sort of come off the page at me as far as like guys who I think would obviously those are probably also the in recent history, even Evans last year in amateur, leaving a lot of sort of more, we got more questions than answers
questions,
as far as like, cause he was on Huskies obviously, but then he was on Yamaha's gas and like, he was kind of like just being on a bunch of different bikes because everyone knew he was going to Triumph, but the bike hadn't been released yet, so he can't be on it yet. So I think that was just a weird scenario for him. And I give him a little bit of a pass on certain things just because of how much up in the air his program has been.
Program was,
But at the same time, I've heard the same things you have as far as just like commitment to doing the work and this, that, and other thing. And that is surprising to hear, just especially coming from a family that obviously, like, I have so much respect for Tim, his dad, and the whole family. They are extremely hardworking. I would be surprised to hear that that Evan's not putting in the work. I think that he does. Romano, I know he's coming off of a knee injury, but I get myself in trouble here, but I feel like sometimes he carries himself with a little bit of arrogance for a guy who hasn't really produced much on a big bike. Like,
and I don't know how much of that is just being, because he's from New York, right?
Right.
So I think those guys, natu- Yeah, he's a city boy, like
New
York. And
he's a city boy. Like, yeah. So, but I, like to answer David's question, and like this will be a bit of a cop out answer, but I don't think there's anyone on the line that wouldn't benefit from going and getting your hands dirty and getting a little bit of perspective about how the rest of the world works and how they live their lives.
Like, well, and even you go back to Jeremy Martin when he got hurt. Now, granted, like. I'm not saying that he wasn't going to pay his bills if he didn't go to work for a race shop, but you know, he went in and started doing some stuff in his shop. And I think it's just like, even on that level, those guys aren't swinging hammers out in the heat every day and stuff like that. But even understanding that side of it, it's like, man, you just have this whole new appreciation and this whole new, like, damn, man, like I really am so fortunate to be able to do what I do. And so,
I think to be a blue collar job. Like, obviously blue collar jobs are definitely a fast track to teaching you that, like, the world sucks when you don't play like professional sport or get to just wake up. Like, I'm a journeyman bricklayer. I started working as a journeyman bricklayer when I was 18 years old, got my ticket when I was 19. My dad's a bricklayer. I work for him, but like I have get up 5:30 in the morning on the job site for 6:30 and we're leaving when dad doesn't want to work no more. And that's honestly, like you got a lot of these guys that like the only things that they have to be on time for is their road ride and their flights that are booked by somebody else. And it's just a reality that nobody else gets to live.
Well, and we've even talked about this some. Like, and again, you've got to think about this in perspective. Like, I had said something the other day where I was like, today's racers aren't as tough. Now, that does not mean like you go back to Kitchen and McAdoo. Tough as in suffering through pain, pursuing, you know, pushing through. Yes, they've got that, but just the all around like grit, like you go back to like Bob Hanna in those days, like, dude, those guys, a lot of them were working these jobs while also being professional athletes. And so it was like, oh, why is Bob Hanna in such good shape? Oh, cause he's swinging a hammer or he's welding or he's doing what, like,
he was a welder. People don't know that he got his, like basically his deal with Yamaha when he went full factory and like was became a professional racer. Part of Bob Hanna's deal was that basically like, he had Yamaha basically be like, in order for me to stop welding and work for you guys full time, you have to replace that income. Like, I can't afford to not weld if you guys don't like basically make sure that I'm making enough money that like I don't have to do that anymore. And that's actually that was a very common thing for a lot of other sports, like professional hockey players had to do that in like the 50s and 60s and stuff like that. But yeah, like sometimes we hear about stories of like guys like Mark Barnett, like just riding until the bikes, just like they all quit and stuff like that.
Yeah, they
and
would break the bikes. Forget,
people often forget that we're not talking about a 35-year-old man who's deciding to ride the wheels off of these bikes. We're talking about it like a 19-year-old who is taking it upon themselves to just to run these bikes until they won't go no more. And then grab another Suzuki and keep going. Like these were the hardworking habits of like teenagers and like guys 5 years younger than you.
Well, that's what I mean, dude. It was the entire spirit of that era. Like, you know, I mean, shit, you're older than I am. And all I hear about is all back when men were men and sheep were scared, you know, when it was, you know, when you walked uphill and snowed both ways and whatever else it is. It's like always they were tougher back then, but it's like, dude, they're right. Like, I hate to say it, but you know, we go back to the, who is it? Hard times make hard men, make soft, which makes good times, which makes soft men, and so on and so forth. Like, it just, at this point, it's like, I've said it before, like, you know, Bob Hanna, Rick Johnson, some of those guys, dude, if they go to the, let's say a bar afterwards and somebody pushes Nick Romano, like, dude, Nick Romano, I don't see as just throwing haymakers, but like, dude, back then those dudes, they're brawlers. Like, they would throw down at the track. They'd throw down after the race. And so, yeah, like you said, I think that's the perfect answer. I don't think any of them could not benefit from it. It's funny enough going over to GNCC. I carry resources is the name of the sponsor, of the team. But they do some stuff with Liam Draper on the Ampro Yamaha team, and then Craig DeLong on Rockstar Husky.
Right.
Both of those guys didn't have a bad race, but did not have a great race at the last round in Tennessee. And it was funny because Monday they've got a video on their Instagram story, and I don't know how it happened. Like, this obviously wasn't done as a punishment, but Carry Resources had them laying concrete. And they're like literally spreading concrete and working with the construction crew. And the Liam had put on there, you know, this is what happens when Boss Man's not happy with the results. He reminds you how lucky you are. And I think it goes to show, like, yeah, you oftentimes forget until it's, you know, those 4 hours of motos and stuff in the sun compared to the 8 to 10 hours every single day in the sun of laying concrete or laying brick or digging ditches or doing whatever actually has to be done to keep the world running, it oftentimes gets overlooked. So, well, we need to talk about the race, I guess, still.
Yeah, no, we'll jump into this thing. Yeah, the 250 class. I called this the RJ Hampshire Whisper Win because I think he was on screen for about 15 seconds of the final lap. Like, I honestly, like, if at like the halfway point you had to quiz me on who was leading and like you covered up the results, like I probably couldn't have told you because they were showing the PC guys, which was an absolute just 52 pickup as far as everyone was down, everyone was hurt, everyone was sad, everyone was crying. And then the Deegan cam that like they must just like, is there like a subscription service where you can just ISO cam him full time?
Gotta be. I think they're actually working on you used to be able to do it with NASCAR where you just picked your favorite rider and your camera just stays on them all night.
That would actually be sick. I would watch that.
I 100% would too, but.
I digress. Deegan cam and then RJ Hampshire just like leading by 3 to 6 seconds and just sort of.
Well, yeah. And I think that's something we've always said RJ's capable of. It's just whether or not he has the. Very much of what we saw with the rest of the field.
He's your point sitter now too.
It's these crazy mistakes, and so I like it. I like RJ a lot, man. Very well spoken, and so you know I think it would be cool to see him put it together. He's older in age. He's put in his time and then some, and he's battled back from multiple you know adverse things, and so like you said, it wasn't anything to write home about, which is exactly why it's worth writing home about. He did exactly what he needed to do. He got the job done.
Yep.
Gets back on top, gets back in the game. So, obviously we touched on, McAdoo and Kitchen. They're tough as hell, but damn, it's just such a bummer. What'd you say? Do shootouts make mice of men?
Yeah.
It's an interesting perspective because when I was watching the broadcast back, they were talking about when they decided to start making the shootout with points, right? Before, like originally it was kind of this exhibition. And it's like, I almost wish they'd go back to that because I think nowadays we preach the smart rider. You know, we're always preaching, oh, don't be afraid to take a fifth. Oh, don't be afraid to don't risk ruining everything for one more position around the guy on the opposite coast. And so, yeah, in a lot of ways, I think it does. It's funny because they try really hard to like beef it up and it's this, you know, it's this battle of the coast and stuff like that. But these guys are businessmen, essentially. They're focused on their job. And that's pretty much what they all said was it's like, I'm really only worried about the people in my coast. And so, whereas I think if it had gone back to the end of the season, it's an exhibition, stuff like that. I think it'd be a little bit more like, you know, oh, now we're going to see who's the best of the best and stuff like that. So,
right.
I would agree that it kind of does, especially in situations like this where you do have championship battles going on as far as like everybody needing points. It's like, sure, you know, Deegan's hoping that these guys get in between him and his competitors and vice versa. But I don't think you really see any of the balls out like, I'm here to make a point on behalf of the East type riding, if that makes sense.
Totally. And then on top of that, like when you combine the coasts, like the 250 class is always hotly contested and there's lots of competitiveness within it. But often you have guys that like, say if they're like a sixth or seventh place guy on their coast, all of a sudden now you see them battling for 15th and 16th and 17th and like, that looks a lot less impressive when you smush them together. And like what I sort of meant of like making mice of men is that like getting a fifth in on your coast and being like a top five guy, now you're like you're battling with the fifth place on the other side. You and Inu are going toe to toe for 12th.
Yep.
And it's not great TV. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it actually puts in, and they're not going any slower. It's just you stack so much more talent in there. And you do get to see like the top versus the top. But also again, like you said, those guys kind of almost become gentlemen to each other. Cause they're like, yeah, actually, yep. like,
hey, man, let's I, all like,
I'm not
going to
do you dirty and, because if me doing you dirty ends up with you retaliating and now I'm on the ground. Like now I've just like, so they like the yep. top five almost sort of tiptoe around each other a little bit.
Yes.
Because they know that they're like, there's nothing that can be gained by like really making that next spot aside from like maybe putting some points between you and somebody else. But yeah, like I was impressed with Kitchen. He's literally, like his ribs might be broken, but, or bruised, but he is made out of iron apparently because he gets back to, was that 15th?
And so, I believe, 15th to 14th, I think.
Yeah, 8 points on the night. He's 2 points back of RJ. And I honestly, respectfully to RJ, I still think this is his championship to lose.
Yeah, well, and I mean, like I said, RJ had a fantastic, flawless ride, but he does have a reputation. I mean, I'm not saying he can't prove me wrong, but, you know, we do know that at any second, RJ can hit the ground. And so, we'll see how it works out, man. The rookies are doing pretty good. I know we've got the rookie update. I still think Juju is on a great path. I heard somebody the other week saying, "Oh, Juju's falling off and this, that, and the other thing." I'm stoked if I'm KTM on Julien Bomaire.
Oh, absolutely. I think, if he can get some better starts and on the races, he gets good starts. He runs that pace.
He's got the pace. Yes.
And he's so young and he's got crazy fitness. I think that, and he's one of those guys, and this is going to be like a guarantee at some point, someone's going to be a broken record talking about how he wasn't all in on moto early in his career. Like mm-hmm. he basically like his last few years on a super mini and then his 250 years, he went lock, stock and barrel into moto, but like that wasn't his only focus growing up. And maybe he doesn't have that as much burnout. Like he's still enjoying working on
his
craft.
He's got the drive. Yep.
And he's still has, I think the ceiling on Julien Bomaire is higher than where it's at, is where he's currently at. Like he has a lot of improvement to do. He can still unlock a lot of things. He's got the fitness and the tutelage to be able to get there. I like a lot of the things that I see from him. There's been a lot of, like, in the first two rounds we've seen him so far, some first race jitters and some rookie mistakes from Casey Cochran. And that's, like, it's your first two races. Baby.
I think it comes with the territory.
Yeah, like I think the days of 125 kids coming in and just smoking everyone, those are so gone. And honestly, even Jet didn't do that. Like, he was leading Anaheim 2 until he crashed, but he was also leading Anaheim 2 because Christian Craig and Dylan Ferrandis were on the ground earlier that race. Like prior to that, like I was at all those rounds, like St. Louis that year, Jet did not look good at all. That was like, he didn't look to become what he was about to become. Like not a lot of people, if you watched Jet in the first two qualifying sessions of his, like the 2020 season, you'd be like, all right, so he's got some shit to work on. He clearly figured that out.
Going back to Bomaire, I feel like that's the thing, is it's like he knows he's got stuff to work on still. And he, like you said, he still seems eager to try to improve, where some of these guys, it's almost like Romano's on the list too. And again, I don't know Romano personally, but it just, from what I see on the media videos and stuff like that, there's a certain almost confidence that's boastful in a like I've got this figured out already type way. And it's like I feel like the ones that really find success are constantly grinding and innovating and reinventing things and stuff like that. And so I think Cochran's got a great team around him that has got that mindset figured out now. I think everybody over there seems like they're trying to keep the pressure off of them, managing expectations, and I think that is the healthiest way to form a successful rider. I think things are starting to get tight for Daxton Bennett. We know it's no secret. Star wants results. you know, yeah. And
he came out the house, he came out firing.
Yes.
Like fastest yes. qualifier.
That's almost
Red Bud.
The worst thing is it's like podium. He's shown that he can do it and now he's just not. And so, you know, he's a Carolina guy, man. I pull for him. I've got a lot of friends that grew up riding in his house and know his family well. And, you know, I like him as a person, but it's like, just especially with the team that he's on, man, he's at least got to have another flash, man. He's got to jump up at one of these next rounds and say, you know, hey, man, I really am still here. And then he has got to put on some impressive performance this summer. So it'll be interesting to see with him. Chance Hymus, I'm still up in the air with him as far as coming back from the injury.
Yeah, he's still got a torn up knee.
Yeah,
his other knee is torn right now. So I'm giving him a pass.
It's hard to judge. And that's what I mean. Like so many of these guys have little things going on behind the scenes, but the knee is not a little thing by any means. And so for him to still be consistently putting it in and you know, I do think he is making improvements. I just think, unfortunately, it's kind of getting swept behind the shadows, under the rug, whatever, just because the results aren't where I think a factory Honda rider people would expect them to be, you know? And so, but all in all, yeah, I mean, I think it's solid performance from the rookies. Deegan should be on that list too, you know, believe it or not. And so I think you've got to, yeah, I know, but technically speaking, you know, impressive stuff from him. I liked what they were saying on the broadcast that it sounds like the team has kind of started stepping in and being like, hey, you got to chill. Like you've got to chill out and stop knifing people off and stuff like this. And so I think that could be dangerous moving forward. If you can get that fire centralized and focused in, that's where I really think you're going to start to see a strategic and a technically sound Deegan where it's like, oh man, this dude's got the ability to put it all together now. So 450s, man, first of all, inner musician feels like I need to mention this. Little disappointed with the trophies. Okay. For those of you that were unaware, the first place in 250s and 450s got a Gibson Les Paul. Okay. One of the most sought after guitars on the market. It's what Slash plays. Countless musicians play. Second and third got Epiphone Les Pauls. Okay. Now Epiphone they were bought out by Gibson. It is a, I'm trying to think of the best way that I can say this. It's kind of like if we went to a race and the winner got a factory Honda, like you got Joe Shimoda's Honda, and then second and third got a Smart Top or an MCR Honda. You know, they're both quality machines. They're able to work, but one is very clearly more prestigious and better than the other. And so, I mean, I don't know what the budgets are looking like. I mean, and there's probably about $2,000 to $3,000 difference between a Gibson Les Paul and an Epiphone Les Paul.
Right.
But I mean, it is the most premier Supercross racing series in the world. We couldn't have done six Gibsons, like whatever.
Yeah. But from a marketing standpoint,
I should have saved that for my
event. I see that as just, if it's Gibson that owns Epiphone, that's just them wanting both of their brands represented.
Brands out, yeah.
And then go like, all right, so we'll give you two Gibsons and four
Well, and it'd have been, balls. It'd have been even more fucked if they'd just given all the 250 guys Epiphones and the 450 guys Gibson. I would have actually said something on that. So,
yeah.
But, no, good ride from Jet.
And fourth place gets a kazoo.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give you a half a drumstick, but, he performed when he needed to, man. I think, I mean, all in all, Webb wasn't really able to do a whole lot as far as making up ground and really giving too much
weird
of a fight.
Surface. It was a weird racetrack to watch. You watched it late. Yeah. I watched it live. Watching Deegan have all kinds of fits with Gage Linville.
Yeah.
Like, that to me tells me that the track is incredibly hard to pass on and there's not really much separating guys because we haven't put Hayden Deegan and Gage Linville in the same conversation since they were at Loretta's like 3 years
ago. Years and years ago, yeah.
Like,
it's
not a slight to Gage Linville whatsoever, but like he's recently, his most recent podium was at an Australian Supercross.
Right. And I mean, you could clearly tell it was like it was almost a mixture of like, you've got to reel your intensity back some. Like, you can't just chop the throttle. You can't just, like, you almost have to really, I think, you
it
know,
it wasn't a big jump line really, aside from the one.
Yeah, it's just smoothness was, I think, the most important factor, I think, on that track. And so, you know, somebody like a Deegan, who is known for just dropping the hammer and, you know, digging in, where a loamier type track where he could have done that, I think it's a different story. But yeah, in a way, it was more just like, hey, wait the extra half a second and roll that throttle on. You know what I mean?
This is like a Kevin Windham track. This is
very, very, very technically necessary. Well, I kind of jumped the gun on our vented plate, let it out session, but the jet thing made me think of the Les Paul. So you go first and I'll think of something else to complain about.
Fair enough. One thing that I used to always love about the professional ranks in throughout my, like, when I try and think of like my formative years, 13, 14, 15, when like the pinnacle of the sport, you're very influenced by that. You just, like, it's very spectacular to you because you're young and you're kind of impressionable. Like, I feel like with James with the pink gear, like, it wasn't just the fact that he wore pink. It's the fact that he wore, or fuchsia, whatever you want to call it. He wore it like 6 weeks in a row. Like,
every
he wore
almost,
the
yeah.
pink with the zebra, and then he also wore some yellow stuff. But like, he might have worn like four or five sets of gear all year. Or like in the 05 season when he wore that black and yellow stuff, like probably eight races out of the 30. We used to see that way more often. Whereas I don't think I've seen Jet wear the same gear twice.
Yeah, it's almost gotten to the point where it's like, I love the theme bikes and stuff like that. And it's cool that the companies can do it. You know, like, I saw Eli Tomac's gear was actually designed by a fan in a coloring book. And, you know, like I think that's cool. And you know, unique things. The St. Jude stuff, I'm all about. Like, don't
Yeah,
get me
I'm
wrong.
Not
I'm
even talking about
yeah,
that
no, no.
or like bringing.
But I do get what you're saying. And I think it's been a mixture of things. I think gear brands have now started reaching multiple different style waves and designs and stuff. But it's like, I mean, you know, I remember when, which they still are kind of like that, but like, Pro Circuit, dude, they wore the same gear every single race, whether, no matter what the hell was going on. And it was like, you know, I don't know. I agree. And it kind of, so I'll go off of that. Cause I saw this video and it's this little kid, and I'm sure there's probably more about to the story, but he's walking up to some rider. I can't remember what his name is, but and he asked for his jersey. As you can see behind me, I was a jersey guy myself as a kid. You know, all of these I got from the riders at races. You know, it's like, it was just part of it, man. And I did it. I knew how to do it. You know, you find the guy that you want and you talk to him at practice beforehand and you knuckle tap. Now, granted, it was a lot easier when you're like that tall, but like, nowadays, I don't think any of those guys do it. I don't care who you are. You're not really seeing a whole lot of jerseys being given out. And I understand there's scalpers and people that are selling them and stuff like that. But I don't know, man. I like it. I think the teams, like your factory teams, need to prepare to give every number plate away and give away the jerseys after every race. Like, I can't see that as a negative thing for them.
Because I think that what happens so much is now a lot of those jerseys get like promised to sponsors, or they get promised to like
they're part of an auction or something like that. Yeah,
an auction, right? It kind of like, yeah, it definitely takes away from that. Like, a fan can go into the pits a day later or even the next weekend and be like, and because like, what often would happen was you'd get a rider who like, oh, I still have my jersey from last weekend. Here you go. Like,
yeah.
Your
B teams and your privateers and stuff like that, dude, I get it. I mean, I've always, you know, like Filthy Phil, you know, he gave me his Moose Racing jersey. He was on 1110 mods, and like, I don't know what his situation was like, but I can't help but assume that he's getting a ton of gear back then. And but like, Jet, dude, this guy's got gear for days. You know, I mean, realistically,
he could
pick one style of jersey and tell Alpine Star, hey, print 200 of these off, and this will only be my giveaway pile for the year.
Well, I
and
think
like,
they,
oh,
got,
I can't
they almost do that with their his VIP thing. Like, they
maybe they do. I was about to say, and that's what I mean. Now it's kind of, it's worked into this. Oh, you're essentially paying for that jersey, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, you know, and I don't like 30-year-olds fighting over somebody's jersey and ripping it out of a kid's hand. Like, but I do think it's like, man, if you're a factory rider, I think you should give your jersey to a kid. Like, I think it's cool. I think it was my favorite part, man. And I mean, it was like, I was driving to the, or riding up to the race. Like, I wonder who I can get, and, you know? And I mean, it's definitely just a cool memory that I have that I think is kind of lost. Now, granted, kids are jackasses these days. I see this at the GNCC too, man. The riders have not even pulled up on the podium. Can I have? Dude, it's like, it is untasteful. And I hate to say it, but you have to do it because eventually the riders get so sick of hearing it, they just say yes. And they give it to the kids, and the kids rip the jersey into three pieces, and everybody runs off, you know, with their part. That is no joke. I have watched that happen in front of me. And so you can probably guess whose jersey it was. Nonetheless, it's just like, I don't know, if you're a factory rider, I don't know whether that falls on the gear manufacturer, on you, on whoever. I just think it needs to be included in it because I think it goes a long way. So,
yeah. Like, I just also think of like a guy like Chad Reed. Like, I had him on the podcast for the Grom Report last week, and that comes out probably today or tomorrow, because Troy's going to neglect to get that out. But like if I think of his 04 season, it's the Paisley gear. Like, he's running that, like, that Paisley blue. I think that was one of his Yamaha had him wearing blue gear almost all the time.
Yep.
It was four phase, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was part of the core line. And he ran that probably, like, if they had 30 races that year, I bet he wore it 15 times. But it was sick. They also kept that gear was also available in black.
Yep. Yep. He had the phase for a while, and then he ran some of that flux gear too that I really liked back when they had flux. That line. So, yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, it's like you kind of, like, it gets synonymous with a certain rider. I mean, it's like that blue kind of Hawaiian looking Thor gear now. Like, Webb really seems to like that. He's worn that several times.
Yeah, he's gone back to that a few times.
Yep. And so
the only guy who bucks that trend is Plessinger, because he wore the same gear at Detroit. Like, that is unheard of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be superstition or something, some kind of mojo.
He's asking to wear that again.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and like I said, man, I think it's cool. I enjoy it. I think it's part of what makes the sport easily followable is it's like, man, you know, oh, this guy wears this kind of gear, and oh, this guy wears this kind of gear. And so it's like, I do like to see some of the new styles and some of the limited edition stuff that comes out, but I agree. I think it's like, if you guys could get a little more consistent where it's like, you know, this, that, and the other thing, then we'll see. I think one thing that I do like that, like, Star does is they let their riders wear different gear. Like, obviously, they're all in Thor, but they're not always wearing the same Thor gear, whereas Pro Circuit almost always is in the same set of gear. Yep.
Yeah.
So, but I think it gives the riders some opportunities for, you know, individuality and what have you. So,
definitely. For me, with Jet, like, especially like Alpine Star, and like, maybe the thing that kind of sticks in my craw about Alpine Stars, I know for a fact that, like, what you see on race day is not at all what they produce. Like, you're not picking that off the rack. Like, it looks similar, but it's not even close. And like, they do so many different designs, and like, not everything's going to be a home run. And a lot of times, like, the stuff that that Anderson wore, and I think they had one of the guys wearing it in the MXGP. I'm like, that was bad stuff. And I guess, like, that's something for everybody, I suppose, but like, that was almost unanimous, like, that didn't hit. So
thumbs down across the board.
Yeah. But honestly, like, hey, and I love myself some Fox. I am a Fox guy through and through, head to toe, tip to tail, you name it. Shimoto's gear this last weekend.
Yeah, I saw.
Burn it before it lays eggs.
Yeah. You were not a fan. I saw that. It was funny because I saw your post about it before I saw the race, and so I was looking for it, and I was like, oh yeah, no, not feeling it. All right, I see now. So, all right, brother. Well, I think it's about that time.
You gotta hit the gym.
Until next time. Yeah, I gotta go pick
some
first
form supplements. Get after it. Yep. Make sure that you're in tip top shape. He's like, honestly, by the time you, like, the racing season rolls around, you get some more riding season, then, like, I'm going to send you gold valves, but you're going to have to go to your service center and get them revalved, because you're going to be 10 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I was about to say it's. I need to not pick things up and put it down, and I need to get my ass on a treadmill and just run. And so,
yeah, I've been running.
Yeah, fuck that. So
I know you've got to run. Appreciate everyone taking the time to listen to these podcasts. For those who don't know, Zach is actually a recording superstar and actually has his own original music. And that's how we pull out every single one of these podcasts. I'll let you tee it up there, big dog.
You guys know it. The Road to Loretta's is officially under the way. And at the end of the summer, we're going to see you guys all out at the ranch.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get on.
Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but every time I hear Out at the Ranch from Zach Herron, I just want to go load up my dirt bike and get prepared to hit the closest regional or area qualifier. But either way, I hope you guys are enjoying these podcasts. I hope that you're listening to not only the Verb Pod Network, but also Big MX Radio. You guys can find me there. I work really hard on these things, and this is just the beginning. Over 1,000 episodes on BigMXRadio.com. And you can find them on iTunes as well as Spotify. You'll find me there. Appreciate every single one of you.